Hey y'all, this is the Queer Archive, a queer and feminist Doctor Who podcast. I'm Brenna.
And I'm Skye.
And...
this is Security Protocol 712. The Echelon Circuit has been activated.
The Echelon Circuit has been... is still...
activated?
We're still isolated from our current timeline, using that loosely, to talk about the 2022 festive special, Eve of the Daleks.
Please stow any hand luggage and prepare for departure.
Let's get the random out of the way.
Making Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks, say, "I am not Nick."
Brilliant. Inspired. Never been done before.
Iconic.
You're done, Nick.
I am not Nick.
But he's Nick, though.
I literally pointed at the TV and went, ah!
It was very much the pointing at the TV moment. Actually, we had a couple of those.
Yeah, we did.
Another one coming up. But I think, this was a great example of just a really fun Dalek episode.
And we know because we have like 17 Dalek episodes from this era.
We for sure do. Actually, for not liking Daleks, I will admit, I have enjoyed all the things Chibnall has done for their episodes. Like, just on principle. First, he made them proper scary again. I was definitely here for that. And then here in this episode, they're basically just a talking gun, you know, to give the time loop some stakes. Mm. And I was here for that as well. Excellent. They were pretty minimal, which is how I like my Dalek.
Ideal, yeah.
Ideal, but... I mean, just some applaudable, classic, typical Dalek behavior moments as well, just thrown in there. Especially the Dalek screaming out, "Exit the ascension device." What the fuck? They know the word stuff, but when they want to talk about an elevator.
Ascension device.
Ascension device, naturally. Also, just that one exterminate delivered to the doctor, I think it was in an elevator scene. Just had some extra sauce on it. That I appreciated. And then, of course, the Nick Briggs.
Nick Briggs was gone hard. Yeah. The when the doctor's using her sonic and she's like, "I've used this before." And the Dalek's like, "That's not going to work this time." And she's like, "It's worked in the past." And he goes,
"Correct. Daleks learn."
I was like, ooh. Okay.
The Daleks got smart.
Yeah, they, Nick said, "Oh, you hired me back for one more time, and I will absolutely be going 100 miles per hour, pedal to the metal. Thank you so much."
He, like, set himself up for that line, which I appreciated. He's like, "She's going to walk right into this." She did. And then when Yaz called the Daleks smart right after calling Dan the inferior one, also appreciated that.
There were two of those moments where I was just like, bang, bang, yes, good, yes, yes.
Also, you know what I learned? I realized something very valuable, because if ever a Dalek confronted me, you gotta have a plan, right? I would just hop on their back.
Dan was so close to executing this brilliant strategy.
Exactly.
Like, he was skipping around it in the idea. Circle. And I was like, why don't you just... bear hug. Let the Dalek do the work for you.
It can't get you.
Give the twisties. Yeah.
If its plunger is facing the other direction, there's no, like, flexibility there. Yeah.
They don't have any bending.
Just hop on his back, bro. I don't know why they haven't, you know, picked up on... They were so close.
We're geniuses and they're not. It's okay.
Mm, right. I also have to say that one Dalek in particular could catch these hands. There was one Dalek who told Yaz that the doctor will never save you, which I thought was unnecessarily cruel. Also, just, what a bitch.
They're all bitches, but this one in particular.
Yeah. What's up with these Daleks just, like, driving the knife in and giving it a little twist?
Peak Dalek behavior, yeah.
Speaking of Yaz, just real quick, she goes to bat hard for her crew twice in this episode, and it is very cute because, of course, she does. That's my ride or die. She said, "Oi, I don't see you coming up with ideas or plans defending her doctor.
First of all, who do you think you're talking to? Who do you think you're talking to? The fuck?"
The second one where she totally backed up Dan, I didn't agree with that much because, honestly, Sarah's question of why Dan is there and why he's talking, it's pretty valid. You know, because sometimes it's like, What the fuck is this Scouser saying?
This when he line said, you have here. We spent so... Like, we paused it and Googled and still...
I checked. This is what came out of his mouth. You didn't half Kane looking at that hologram.
What the fuck does that mean?
I need to know what it means.
I can't.
Someone British, please help us. Or someone who speaks Dan.
Yeah, for a second I thought, I was like, maybe it's a cricket thing. And I like started going down that. Because
that's fair.
Like
very
half
smart.
Cane is a thing on cricket handles. And I was like, I won't understand the cricket part of it, but then at least I'll have an explanation. And the internet was like,
nice try.
I don't know what you're talking about. And I went, okay.
It's like when you're trying to tell the internet what meme to show you, and you're just, like, throwing random words at it, like, trying to compile a sentence.
Old man reading book in wig looking confused, ? And the internet's like,
do you mean this?
Yeah. Sometimes it knows, sometimes it doesn't. Although that moment that you're talking about here where Sarah's talking shit about Dan, and Yaz goes, hey, nobody talks shit about the Scouser except for me. And Dan's like, that's right. And then she goes, shh. Was actually one of my favorites. Because she was like, I'm the only one who can drag him because he's my buddy. But also, shut the fuck up.
Oh, Dan, he's just the little pup.
Yeah.
He's just the puppy of the house.
Also, why are the Daleks such bad shots in this?
Because our heroes shouldn't die, Brenna.
I know, but someone on Reddit said the Daleks in this episode make stormtroopers look like Hawkeye, and nothing, like, they even have their little Tommy gun shooters out, and still,
they got
like,
rounds on this one.
Yeah, all around, it's like an outline of the Doctor, but never on the Doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true, but also, like, if they were better shots, the Doctor would be dead.
I understand the plot reason. It's just silly. But I do, like, overall, I thought this episode was good. I enjoyed it. It's fun. It's got a good ticking clock. The guest performances were really solid. I enjoyed it.
So good. Yeah. The ticking clock was a stress. Like, I know they're all gonna make it. Why am I sweating so much?
There's no way, by the way, there's no way they successfully could have done everything they did in 60 seconds on
absolutely
that last one.
Not.
Whatever, it's fine. Keep
it
going.
Demanded perfection, which is not a reality.
No, just like physically, there's no way you could do that in 60 seconds from where you all started. Anyways.
Tis is sci-fi.
Yeah.
I will say my feelings in general about this episode are a bit all over the place, and I don't know why. And it's not because I didn't like the episode, I loved it, but I'm just having a hard time separating what overjoyed me and what irked me. And I couldn't tell you why. I'll probably have a better grasp on it by the time we get to the full-length episode, crossing my fingers. But I'm also, I think I'm realizing it's just taking me longer to process episodes now.
Mm.
And my emotions are getting more intense. Because Jodie's time is coming to an end, and I hate that for me. I hate Jodie's time coming to an end, and I also hate emotions. Mm. So this is just, like, a hard time
for me. It's a difficult
time
for you.
Yeah. So bear with me. This might be somewhat of a mess, but hey, that's what Echelon Circuits are for.
So I think I only have four more completely unrelated thoughts to one another left for this section, so we're just going to potpourri our way out of here.
Potpourri.
Yeah. Number one, I love when there's a recurring character you never see. That shit
Jeff
always kills me. Denise, Phoebe's roommate and friends.
Yes.
Maris, Crane, and Fraser. This.
Oh, Jeff. You bad, bad man.
They become a fully filled character.
We have
like sketched out, but you just
Jeff.
Never see them. When Yes is like, I think Jeff lives here.
Jeff, you live like this?
Jeff. Yeah. Just, that's really, I lived in a house, the last place I lived in, where it was a short sale before the person that bought it. And so we kept finding just weird shit in the house. And so we called the person who lived there before a name. So we'd be like, fucking Jessica, look at this shit. So it was like that, where it's just like, Jessica patched this pipe in this way and that's why it burst. So there's very much like a... that energy to it for me that makes me just crack up.
Yeah. I love a Jeff that we can blame everything on.
Oh, yeah.
He was so blamable.
He was so blamable. my man, why do you have 3 years expired beef and also, beans? A whole terrifying. Storage room? Like, what's happening in there? Yeah.
Terrifying.
I didn't love the direction in here for the most part. Mm. A lot of that, like, shaky hand cam stuff. So, and to me, part of it is I grew up in the early 2000s when the handy cam, like, first came into being. And right. people were using it constantly. Like, who's it, Soderbergh? Where I'd be like, what the fuck is happening? I can't see anything! So I just get, like, born flashbacks where I'm like, what is even... fuck! It's just annoying, but also it was a little too much. But I did love the hero shot right after they all say deal. Oh, yeah, shit. More of that, yes, please.
Inject it into my veins.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt that hero shot real hard. I'm also generally not a fan too much of the handycam, or the shaky handycam in particular, probably for the same reasons you just mentioned. But I did think that there are a couple of moments where it was used super effectively here. And yeah, I think that hero shot won the day.
Yeah. The Carl cameo? Why?
I don't die. Care. I loved it. He's so precious, Carl. It's just me.
You're important, Carl. That's
I'm
right.
important. That's right. He hasn't forgotten his lesson. His
mantra.
And I respect Good. That. Yeah. Yes.
It's so stuck in my brain life. That I didn't even remember his name was Carl. Just when oh, we no. first watched it, I went, I'm important.
Just an important boy. Mm-hmm. Just drinking his tea, listening to his affirmations. I hope he still listens to those affirmations.
Yeah, I hope he does.
Or
too.
He just doesn't
I hope
need
he's
them.
Not working on the crane anymore. I hope he got a job that works for his skills and yes. his personality.
Yes. agreed. We want so much for Carl.
Yeah. And then my last note, which is kind of random, but also kind of a bridge over to the writing section. Mm. I really thought that the TARDIS was going to be stuck on reset and we wouldn't see the inside until the 14th Doctor. I think that's a missed opportunity, honestly. Like, that would have been smart to just be like, it's still resetting. We don't get it for the last two episodes.
My face right now.
Yeah. Sky is not pleased with me, but I think as a writer, I think that would have been way
hate
better.
Hate that. I would be so pissed that, I mean, I am so pissed that we only have two more episodes with Jodie. So, like, depriving her of her best boo, like, her day one, like, we already had that at the beginning of her run where she was, like, had this big lead up to, like, finding her TARDIS, and I never want her to lose her TARDIS again. That's just my personal opinion on the matter.
I think it would have been good.
And I hate that idea, but I see why, if you are a person who loves pain, that would be an interesting writing tactic. Speaking of which, shall we talk about writing for the episode?
Yeah. I love a good time loop episode. Emphasis yes. on good.
Yes.
And I think this is a solid entry into the pantheon of time loops. Best time loop episode, of course, goes to, mm-hmm. as I have always been, from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Cannot be topped as far
the
as
one.
I'm aware.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people will be like, Heaven Sends a time loop episode. And I'm like, yeah, kind of, sort of. I mean, he repeats himself, but also not quite the same way. But
also, it's really good, so I don't
it's
know.
It's really good.
We need to compare them. They're all great. Yeah.
I will have to enter a formal complaint, though. This, not a rom-com. Don't tell me the special is going to be a rom-com and then do this. I am a certified rom-com specialist, and I've been authorized to make these sort of critiques.
Yes, after recently reading approximately 7,000 rom-coms this last year.
406 books in 2021, no big deal.
That wasn't an exaggeration.
It's not.
Yeah, I'm not surprised you have strong opinions about this categorization. There was some comedy, there was some romance. Sure, I'll buy it. But I think he was definitely using this term solely based on Sarah and Nick's enemies to lover banter, which was present, so...
Not enemies to lovers. Banter, yes, but not enemies
not?
To lovers. No.
They didn't like each other? Oh,
no,
shit, he did.
He likes her.
He okay.
And she's just... it's Grumpy Sunshine. If
Grumpy
you want
Sunshine.
One.
Okay, you're right, you're right. Not bad.
It's also... We don't get a lot of rom-com episodes in Doctor Who, but we have a perfect one. It's Husbands of River Song, which is a screwball comedy. And that is, like, it's perfect. Their chemistry is incredible. They have, like, the beauty of screwball comedy is it's fast. It's really, really yeah. fast. That is what screwball comedy is. So you get lots of the ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba fast-paced banter with lots of, like, ridiculous situations. It's as close as we get to a rom-com, and it's damn near perfect.
Totally. It's so,
so it's kind of like a... you should just leave it.
Oh, don't compare it to that. Yeah. I mean, this one was just a different genre. Like, to me, the rom-com-y moments were, like, the mom being like, why don't you find a man on New Year's Eve? That is a rom-com premise, straight out of the book. And just the, like, awkward misunderstandings between the two. And, yeah, the grumpy person coming around and, like, the sunshine person getting a dose of reality. I think that that was there. And the way that it ended. They were obviously like, now we're traveling the world together. Yay! Just mixed with the throw Dalek in there. But absolutely agree that the rom-com of rom-coms in the Doctor Who universe will never be beaten. Because that was, like, truly lighthearted all the way around.
Yeah, this one was, like, lovely.
This one was intense for a rom-com because, I mean, it wasn't purely a rom-com. It was a rom-com with a time loop Dalek countdown. So, I mean, I liked the mix. Totally fair. I am not the rom-com specialist in the room, so I've spoken my piece.
That's right. I think with the exception of the big speech, more on that later, there's some pretty great dialogue in here, and I think it's probably one of Chibber's better scripts in that regard, in my opinion.
Yeah, agreed and agreed. Also, thank you, Chibnall, for this line.
I don't care if he's a weirdo. And he is a weirdo, you know, but he's decent. And he's got a good heart. My friend Lauren actually says that good-hearted weirdos are actually the keepers. So,
isn't that just perfectly quotable? With this fandom of queerdos, yeah, we were like, that's ours now, thank you very much. Slap it on a ribbon and meet me at Galley.
And we will.
We will literally have that ribbon at Galley. Yeah. Find us. Yeah. What about guest stars?
They were both great. Yeah. I don't really like Aisling B's character, Sarah. But I think she's turning in a great performance here. It's that old Irish exasperation. Oof. Mammy!
Mammy, it's 4 minutes to midnight every year. Why are you calling me now?
Yeah, oh my God. My first note in this entire episode was this Sarah woman is stressing me the fuck out. Oh my God. Like, the moment she appeared on screen, I was like, I'm so stressed. Why are you so angry?
Yeah.
And, like, we've all been there, but damn, she was a jerk. Also, she keeps answering her mom's call. Like, this is just a TV thing.
Yeah.
But she keeps answering her mom's call. She was literally mid-life or death situation. Silly. Silly behavior.
Also, I kept waiting. Like, this is a Chekhov's gun situation. I kept waiting for her phone to go off and give away her position.
Yeah.
Because they made such a big deal at the beginning where she's it's broken. I can't silence it. So it felt like that would be important.
I'm important.
And it absolutely really wasn't.
No. She gave away her position when she
it was her and Nick yes. said, I've liked you for 3 years, and she goes,
3 years?
Oh my, what? 3 years?
No! Oh, and God. That's when the Dalek goes, brr.
Yeah, that's what gave away her position.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was super hard to like, but despite her character, the actor,
yeah,
holy shit.
She was great.
So good. I think it was Amanda Ray Prescott who was like, I'm super pumped for this actor to be a guest star on Doctor Who, and now I know why.
Yeah, she's a Irish comedian, so that explains the timing a lot.
Yeah, I think some folks were talking about something else that she's been in, and I'm like, I would watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also really enjoyed Ajani Salman was very sweet and charming as Nick, but his serial killer closet gave me extremely bad vibes. Like, oh my God. I think Chibnall was attempting to write it as Nick is awkward and doesn't really understand that this is normal, but that is a really big storage closet, bro. It is full of women's stuff.
But the size of the unit.
Yeah. And they tried to, like, they tried to fix it with him saying, they're all still alive! And they're Yaz and Dan going, oh, okay.
They're alive still, Atla?
Of course. Oh, God. Of course.
But it's just like,
the look that those two women gave each other of, like, the knowing look, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I 100% saw what Chibnall was going for. Someone who was big-hearted, just trying to be thoughtful, because he's like, what if these people want their stuff back? I'm not just going to throw it out.
What if this person wants this 60-year-old Monopoly?
It probably has 12 pieces missing. And is just, like, wildly awkward about it and does not know how to make it sound not creepy. And maybe he was written or played as neurodivergent, too. There's that layer. But also, he's just coming up with ideas to talk about with her and trying to catch her on New Year's Eve, etc.
Paper-thin excuses.
Etc. Yeah. Yes.
I'll buy.
Like, so bad. But all that saying, Chibnall just should have recognized that it just would not read as simply awkward for good reasons.
Yeah.
While I felt like it was very clear that he didn't have any of the, like, entitled or nice guy sentiments I would be looking for immediately after marking that storage unit as a huge red flag, I will say it was just maybe just too much mental gymnastics for something that should absolutely just be avoided. That being said, I definitely had just as hard of a time getting over the red flags I clocked in Sarah's behavior as I did his. So they were both kind of hard for me to get on board with.
Yeah.
At first, and then, you know, eventually the episode wins you over, as it does. Another small thing, I wish Chibnall would have taken into account the layer of racism that would inform the interactions between Sarah and Nick. I get that the time loop had to kill the characters every loop for the stakes, and honestly, loved that concept. Super fun. I do, however, wish Nick wasn't the first one to be seen killed every loop.
Yeah.
Super easy fix. Just hits a little too close to the black man dies first trope, and that too, like I said, easily avoidable.
Yeah.
Outside of those missteps, oh my god, I love these two guest actors, these two performances. Ajani is so precious. I would watch anything with him in it now. And Aisling fucking nailed it. I love a tight, strong cast. Everyone was used exceptionally well.
This is actually one of the nice outcomes of COVID production, that they just could not have that many people, and it really forced Chibnall to pare down the number of people in the scripts. That's right. Which means that you get time to actually get to know the characters a little bit. That makes a huge difference.
He does it well. I really needed that from Chibnall. Just like, what's it called? Like a closed room episode?
Fishbowl? Is that what you're thinking of?
Maybe it's a fishbowl. Yeah.
We do this every time we mention if it's a closed room or a fishbowl or something else.
But y'all get it. It's really nice and refreshing to have that every once in a while to really, like, flesh out and get that emotional growth for each character. And, like, this was a perfect time to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. TARDIS team.
Good on this episode for correctly identifying Dan. Inferior. Nailed it.
The inferior human is correct.
Yeah, I always love a little bit of Dan dragging.
Yeah. Although I liked him best in this episode on account of going from blocker to wing Dan. The number of fics where the premise is him asking, so have you ever told her? It's high. It's very high.
I loved this was straight out of AO3.
It really was.
Like, there have been several moments with Dasmin that have been straight out of AO3, but none more than this.
Yeah.
every author was, like, checking, like, is this, like,
this is my
word for word my script? have been saying this.
Not just him saying that to Yaz, but also later him telling the doctor, she likes you. No, she likes you, and I think you do know what that means, and you just keep pretending you don't, and I don't really understand why.
Yep. And the eye roll after she just goes radio silence.
Yeah.
The one time I stand the Dan. I don't remember who said this, but you can have rights for, like, one moment, Dan. This episode, you can have rights. I loved the role he played in this episode, but my opinion of his presence as a companion on this TARDIS remains 100% unchanged.
Yeah.
The role needed to exist. An outside character needed to pick up on the Doctor, Yaz, romantic tension, give them a little nudge, etc., etc. But did it need to be Dan? Did that character need to be a white, straight dude companion who largely took up space this entire season?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. If he played this role sooner and perhaps just wasn't a whole ass companion, I would have a different opinion, of course. But even then, like, we could have had Diane as the reoccurring guest instead. She pops up enough to be the one to gently tell Yaz, I see you. And yes, it is that obvious. Could have been Diane. Anyways, okay, I rest my case. I promise. Funnily enough, though, what is hopeful, seeing this from Dan, is I think Dan's rooting for Thasmin is very much a stand-in for the show's opinion of the ship. The show wants Yaz and the Doctor to at least tell each other how they feel. And it sounds like it will end with, like, good feelings. But of course, in loss, because we know 13 is leaving one way or another, but, like, they will depart on good terms, it sounds like. Yeah, yeah.
I also really loved Yaz's talk with Dan after he says, so have you ever told her or thought about that? Her saying, I've never admitted this to anyone, I haven't even admitted this to myself, is a really real and relatable moment as a queer person. Love that for us, and especially love that for all the young queer folks who are watching, and I know they're out there because they're blowing the internet up. Bless them.
Yep, you see them. Mm-hmm. There's a reason.
Yeah.
I have so many feelings about Yaz.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
That's the sound of everyone pretending to be
Let me slide
shocked.
Your soapbox over so you Get can take it ready. A step up.
I am so sorry, but this is going to be a soapbox. Because I can't get over how much I love this character. Whitaker's longest-running companion. And maybe the show's? Question mark? I'm not sure about that, but...
Depends on how you count it.
Okay. She's a queer Pakistani Muslim woman, and she's brilliant. And like you said, Yaz's queerness feels so goddamn real to me.
Mm.
Sometimes it is... It's honestly painfully... real sometimes and painfully believable, but I continue to relate so deeply to her, and her story and her relationship dynamic with the doctor, it's just gripped me so profoundly, and I'm definitely not the only one. So yeah, I'm gonna be truly a wreck for Jodie's last episode. I think back to so many seeds planted in previous seasons that so many of us picked up on, right? And they're now being confirmed, and that's, like, a really good feeling. I think of her experience with getting bullied in school.
I've heard things are tough.
Everything we saw in Can You Hear Me, just such a queer story. The panic and confusion we saw in her, the shame that kept her from sharing it with her family, the proximity to houselessness, making that connection with an older woman who got her through her darkest moment.
What if this moment where you want to run away from everyone, including yourself, is just that. A moment.
And made her believe it gets better.
What if we find a way to get you through it and out the other side?
The falling hard for her first crush that she could actually admit to herself. Oof.
Felt like, I'd rather not have known. I'd rather not have met her, because having met her and then being without her, that's worse.
Yes, yes, yes. Check, check, check. All very, very real. And this is why I have some words for fans who insist on, at this moment, bringing up and making the point that they're tired of companions falling in love with the doctor. And I apologize for this rant within a rant, but here I go. It just feels like such a profound erasure of what this moment is actually about. Because Yaz being confirmed in love with the doctor is not a rose being in love with Ten. It's not another Amy Pond. A sapphic Pakistani Muslim woman discovering she's in love with a genderqueer weirdo from space with a good heart is important in a different way.
I mean, she's just...
It is equally about this young woman discovering her queerness.
I don't know what to do, Dan. I've never told anyone. Not even myself.
Just tell her.
It's not that easy.
Look.
About how complicated and scary and wonderful that is for a queer person. Moments in her childhood and adolescence that may be beginning to make sense now. About her fear of admitting to herself what she is feeling. Again, I think back to Can You Hear Me when Yaz told Anita,
you must be feeling pretty trapped and alone. I'm feeling way more than that.
And so many of us knew exactly what she meant by that statement. And the queer coming of age narrative has now been made canon for us. And thus far, all of that subtext has only existed in our fanfics, in our shared fan conversations. And there's a reason you are seeing so many queer fans celebrating so deeply together right now. Because having a woman doctor and her queer Pakistani Muslim woman companion discover her queerness through their relationship together on Doctor Who is healing. So let us have this moment. I promise you we need it in a way that is so much more than just another companion falling in love with the doctor. End of rant.
Yeah, those are not the same at all. So if anyone's listening to this and they're like, yeah, I'm so tired of companions falling in love, just fuck right on off. You buzz off. They're not the same.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. Also, the Doctor doesn't fall in love like a human. And I would obviously be here for some ace representation.
Yeah.
But if it's explicit and if it's purposeful and meaningful, I cannot equate the countless women that have fallen in love with a man doctor to this moment.
I was going to say, that's also just not true within the scope of the show at all. Like, obviously, 10 Rose, what? But 12 River, 12 Loves River, 12 just, I mean, that's like the whole point of Husbands of River Song is that
yes.
12 really does love River and he just doesn't know how to show it in a way that makes sense. And he's trying to, right? When she says, you can't expect a monument to love you back. And he says, no, you can't, because he's trying to help her see that he's not the doctor. He's just the doctor.
And the doctor is massively more human than we think they are sometimes.
Yeah.
And the show is making them more human with all of their growth and many of their arcs and narratives.
Yeah. That's the arc for 12. And that's, we're coming to the end of 13's arc. And we've talked about this before. The journey towards humanity is the journey towards mortality. So of course, as you're getting closer to whatever thing you've been learning about what it means to be a person for 13, it's stop keeping people an arm's length away and be willing to be vulnerable.
Stop.
It's coming to the end of, that means you're about to regenerate. Because it's just, that's the bag with the show.
Yeah.
We are, speaking of the end of her journey, we're going to get that Tasman kiss like 10 seconds before she regenerates, aren't we? That's how they're going to do it. That's so shitty.
Because they're trying to kill us.
Yeah, that's awful. Classic.
It's so shitty. You know, another thing I honestly still stand by are my previous comments on how long it has taken Tasman to be validated. Look, I love a slow burn. Love it. Maybe, I think it's maybe my favorite trope.
Gross, but hate it. Keep going.
I know you hate it. I love it. I'll just be over here with Delia, savoring. But this, no, I don't know.
I need a hate smooch by 20% or I'm out.
Here's the thing. I have to know I'm going to get something worth my weight.
Yeah.
But, shit, fam. Like, have we not waited long enough? Coming from someone who loves a slow burn, we've been ready. Not just, like, hopeful ready, but, like, I've known. Maybe it is my relentless optimism. Maybe.
At least partially, but keep going.
But I have known Tasman has been coming for a long time. Like, I've been convinced since Villa Deodati. Convinced. Like, again, not hoped BBC would miraculously get their shit together. Actually expected to see this play out, not a matter of if, but a matter of how and when. Up until my person's a bit different, I had just been enjoying the ship's ride at sea, just all aboard. But when the BBC momentarily tweeted, I bet Lord Byron doesn't have two hearts.
They deleted that with a quickness. And then that same week, I remember Jody met Alex Kingston at a convention, and they tweeted the Doctor meets her wife and then deleted that one. And we were like, yo.
Yes. The most important tweets are deleted. Let's just say that.
The internet's forever, BBC. Mm-hmm. It's for fucking
I ever. Remember, because we had just come home from...
From Galley. From we watched Galley. It at Galley. And all of us lost the scream in the room when she said, my person's a bit different.
At Galley watching that,
with 2,000 people, different time, different time.
I nearly stood up on my chair.
Yeah.
And I knew it in my heart. So it's like, that would not have happened if they're not gonna have some follow-through. Yeah. Like, it just wouldn't have happened. And then I was sitting on this bed, and I saw that tweet come in, immediately screenshotted it. And thank God I did. Like, I sent it to you. I sent it to you immediately, and they deleted it 2 minutes later. And then I was like, I'm done. Like, that's a wrap. Like, it's happening. Like, they really doing this, and I've been deceased ever since. So, like, knowing for that fucking long, it's been too long.
Like, this is not a slow burn. Yeah. What they're doing is not a slow burn.
It's
a slow
fucking
burn,
torture.
Like, it's not for me, but I understand it, and when I see a good one, I'm like, hell yeah, that was satisfying, because a slow burn builds so gradually until you're like, is it real? Because I'm always alone! And then when they do, you're like, oh, thank God. And this is just like, you have been fucking about with me for a season and a half. Let's go. There's only 2 episodes left. I don't have the time.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they, what they, when, I mean, we wanted it since literally episode one. We saw Yaz and we knew she was one of ours. We knew. One of us. We saw 13 and like definitely I said, one of us. Jodie Whittaker has never played a straight woman in her life. So I was like, naturally, this is where this is headed. But it was when Nadia said, "Are you two put that question in our mind, Chibnall.
Third episode.
That was your line. Yeah, so it's been a ride. They really doing this, so do it already.
Yeah.
And how dare Chibnall create a wide open opportunity for them to kiss with the fireworks and everything? And then just let us sit and watch that moment pass them by. Yeah, that's a drive your kids to McDonald's and order a single black coffee move. He had to know how painful that would have been for us, and I hate pain. But at least the straights didn't get their kiss either, because could you imagine?
Riots.
So that was my sole comfort. Yeah, I don't know why that choice. I guess because Chibnall probably knew he wanted to wait on the kiss, and so he's like, we can't have the straight couple kiss. So they're both just gonna stand here awkwardly.
Yeah.
But either way, for many reasons, there is definitely a parallel being set up between Sarah Nick and Dr. Yaz, especially when Sarah was saying,
"I always sort of wanted to travel. Yeah, I had this, I had this romantic notion, I suppose, that I would go traveling the world with someone. But, never really had someone to do it with."
Which is exactly what Yaz does with the doctor. She travels with the doctor and for 3 long years has this unrequited crush on her. And yes, that sounds familiar, right? Like the 3 years and everything. And someone just tweeted the most heartbreaking thing, which was heartbreaking in the moment, but now it has like 7 more layers of meaning. But when Graham is giving his speech at Grace's funeral, he says, "Why am I complaining? You had 3 gorgeous years. I'm complaining because I wanted more." And of course, at that moment, the camera very poignantly, with much depth of field, focuses on Yaz and then bleeds into focusing on the doctor as he's saying those words. But the 3 years part is what fucking tipped me over. I was like, that is so, so grossly specific. How dare you? Just pain.
I like how you're like, I don't like pain, but hurt comfort's one of your favorite kinds of fix.
Okay. I have the hurt. Where the fuck the comfort?
It's gonna be waiting in the last 5 minutes of Jodie's last episode.
It's not, it's not enough.
They're gonna smooch, and then she's gonna be like, I have to go now, and Yaz is gonna be like, okay, I'm gonna go work for UNIT. End.
Manda Gill, who is not an emotional person, bawled her eyes out in filming this last scene. I am looking forward to it. But I'm also not looking forward to it. Ooh, not ready. Mm-mm. You've been warned. I will be an absolute mess. Do I have one last Thasma note? I think I do.
You do.
I've also noticed that New Year's specials are significant episodes for Yaz, and I love that. But another thing is I absolutely loved the symmetry of Yaz spending 3 full seasons gazing at the doctor, usually gazing at science or something she's admiring. And now here we see the doctor gazing at Yaz as she admires the fireworks. I thought that was very lovely.
Nice.
And that's it.
Shall we finish by talking about the doctor?
Yeah.
I wish her "we try again" speech was better.
Needed a couple passes, Chips.
Yeah. Big doctor speeches, not generally Chibnall's strength, unfortunately.
Mm. He's had a couple.
Yeah, I think most of her good speeches were written by someone else.
Oh, yes, because the wedding speech in Demons of the Punjab,
is
one of my faves, was Vinay.
And her speech in Villa Diodati was Maxine Alderton.
You're right.
So
what's been him? The first episode.
I think her first episode, "We Can Choose Who We Are," is a great speech. Yes. And I actually think the incantation at the end of Saranga is really, really lovely. Like, I briefly thought about getting it on my body. Lovely. So he can. He has the capacity. Just not... he can't whip out bangers like Moffat.
Yep.
Moffat Coretta speech. So I was disappointed with that. The good news is that Jodie Whittaker really does deliver every damn time, even when the material's not that great. This is a great example.
I know, right? That's exactly how I felt. She was doing the best with what she had, which she always does. And along with her performance, the direction, and the music that followed that with her hero shot, like we've mentioned already, really came to save the day.
Yeah. Also, an all-time sturgeon face from her when the Dalek says, we're executing you for your crimes. And she goes, what crimes?
Crimes with that bee, exactly.
Yeah, so good.
Absolutely. Speaking of crimes, the Doctor sits real gay.
Yep.
Jodie Whittaker is a gift.
It's true. Well, that's it for the Echelon Circuit series for now. We actually are returning to our normal timeline for our full episodes on Series 13.
We are.
Eventually.
Eventually. I don't know when that will be. So we'll also, see I don't remember how to do those.
Soon-ish? Question mark?
Time is wibbly-wobbly nonsense.
Yeah. Watch this space.
Until next time.
Be gay.
Do crimes.
Yeah. Tune in your speakers and please be my doctor, whoever. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes, sir.